I've just got to talk about every song.
I want to do all of it.
Same.
I don't have shit to do.
I love your space, bro.
Thanks, man.
It's kind of perfect.
It's great.
Everyone good? Mike good?
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
We were brutal the whole year we were making this.
Oh, my God.
About, like, drilling deeper.
And what was really different was that we kind of went against our comfort zone. I remember there was one night, it was, like, raining or something, and Phineas and I had, like,
a big fight.
Phineas was like, I don't like doing this anymore. I don't want to write music right now.
I remember, like, we just had this argument of me being like, just say how you feel and let's write a song about whatever you're scared about.
And I think that this was, like, the first day, really, that I was able to be honest.
Which is crazy. We've been listening to Billie Eilish search for honesty since day one as a young superstar landing on the world stage in the biggest possible way. And ever since then, we've all been awarding and rewarding them because their music and the art they make is so honest and so creative and brilliant. But that doesn't mean there isn't road to run. And the fact that we have a brand new Billie Eilish album, and both Phineas and Billie in Phineas's studio for our longest, most comprehensive conversation yet, means there's so much more to say in the music and right now.
I feel like we traveled all over the world at various points, which I've loved.
And long may that continue, by the way. Let's go somewhere
else.
But just to come home, I'm kind of like high-key, been dying to come into this space and hang out with you in this room or a room like this. It was very different last time. Probably not that much bigger, though, because this isn't huge.
No.
It's super small. Yeah.
Do you need that?
I don't think we need it, but I like efficiency. This is also like, this is the basement of my house. It's a room I had. We just filled it with tools. The room we're in right now basically existed when we made Billie's second album. We finished her second album. Mm-hmm. Almost immediately, a pipe burst above this room and fully flooded the studio.
Tough.
Like, completely destroyed.
Irreparable equipment.
The equipment almost all survived, just miraculously. But the room was destroyed and had to be, like, aired out and hot fans on it for days so mold didn't grow.
Yeah. Crazy.
And it had to be completely rebuilt. And we rebuilt it pretty similarly, which was a good sort of indicator that it was effective for us. But I think on this album cycle, the big change was there's a couch off camera right there. And Billie spent the last album sitting on the couch recording vocals. And Billie spent this album sitting like right
at
here. With this microphone, and we just were like
pilots, side by side.
Pilots in an airplane. It's like,
honestly,
complete co-piloting.
It was so side by side, and even a lot of times when I was working on vocals and stuff, Phineas was there and I was here.
That's totally
so
true.
We just totally switched spots, which is really sweet.
I did listen to the first album again the other day, and the opening, which seemed charming back then, is like now one of the greatest album openings of all time. Because it's the most honest teenage representation of a record ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, maybe I'll talk to them about that through this lens just once and just say, okay, if you could like go back in time and walk in the room, like listen through the door and be like, oh my God, there's young Phineas and young Billie making that record and they're fucking around trying to figure it out. And you kick the door in, what would you say to them based on what you know now?
I don't even know. I mean, do you have any idea what you would even say to us both?
It would be interesting to feel the energy of two people who are like very unaware of
what's to come.
The thing that they're doing being meaningful to other people. I certainly wouldn't want to mess it up. I wouldn't want to go.
No, I kind of might just hear up against the door and then walk away. I would want to maybe peek in, but I think that
keep it vicarious.
Yeah.
Anything that I could say of like, you know, don't be so stressed out or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, you can tell, you could probably, the closest you could get is probably tell, quietly whisper to each other, hold on tight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't try to tell someone to avoid what's going to happen regardless because it all adds up to this moment and it all adds up
I
to
know.
It.
Do we talk about the thing?
The thing?
The thing. Do we talk about it? The game.
Zane knows the game.
Do the cameras know the game?
I don't know if the cameras know
Okay.
The game. Phineas and I created a game and it has, you know the game.
Yeah. especially the game.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a good game.
It's an amazing game. This was created
about a year ago.
No, it was like the end of last year.
Oh, you're right. It was like the fall of last year.
Yes. Yeah, so this is, and since then, this is a game we've shared with everyone we know, and like every artist and everyone in the music industry.
Just to haunt them.
It's just good to be aware of. So it's a game called Fear or Fart.
Right.
Okay. And basically,
how did it arise?
Well, can't give them full detail, but basically we were sitting at this computer, and when we would get here to work, it wasn't like, you know, walking in and like, all right, you know, let's get to work. It was like we hang out. We're buds. Like we're siblings. We like to hang out.
And we don't live together anymore, so now we got to catch up.
I know. We have to catch up. We have to talk. Whatever. So we'll do whatever we need to do before we start making music. And sometimes it's like hang out upstairs, eat, play, whatever. And sometimes it's like YouTube, whatever it is. And we were in here and we were like looking at
Happier Than Ever,
different albums and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that we started playing like some music. And I remember Phineas going like, oh, this guy liked the smell of his own farts. And I was like, oh, it's so interesting. Like, yeah, for sure he does. Like, he really was loving how it was smelling. And then we were going through all these albums that we know and kind of labeling them as like, oh, did this person like their smell their own farts when they were in the middle of making this?
Right.
And then we got to some people and I was like, what about them? And Phineas goes, no, that's Fear. And so then we decided to, we realized that every single thing in the universe can be put in one or the other category.
And the good, the
which
fun,
just art. To be really clear, is Fear
or Fart
or Fart.
Here's the caveat: both could be good
both
or
are
bad.
Amazing or terrible.
Yes,
has nothing to do with
because
good
like
or bad.
There's some great. There's been some great farts.
You can there yeah, 100%. There you can farts. Make a great album and know that it's great. You can make it and be like, I'm so awesome,
I'm
and it can be fire. Good.
Mm-hmm.
And also sometimes it can get in the way and it can you know promote some like laziness
equally,
or whatever.
Fear
can super get in your own way and prevent you from taking risks. So it was like, when we say it, it's like, we really mean no offense of like...
It's more just like, you know, fear is like, you know, second-guessing yourself and not feeling like you're totally, you totally know what you're doing or you feel like it might not be...
Mm.
It's just second-guessing, you know? And then fart is the kind of like, no.
All right.
I got this.
When we all fall asleep. Fear.
100% fear. Yeah.
Big fear. Yeah.
It's funny because I definitely smell some fart on that album.
No, that's just farty teenagers. that's just teenagers.
We just thought we were. Bad guy's quite smelly.
We thought we were funny.
But bad guy's not real.
We thought we were funny.
No, it's not real, but it definitely walks like it's fucking real.
Yes, but bad guy was still made out of fart. Sorry,
yeah,
fear.
I mean,
sorry.
Out of fear.
It smells like fart, but. It is fear.
But it's made out. Okay, good. That's good. That's a new subcategory.
And then
subcategory.
So the thing is, we bring this up because we determined that Happier Than Ever is the fart album of ours. It
Crazy.
Is a fart album.
Because I hear Fear on that record.
And again, there are things we're super proud of on Happier Than Ever, but I know from thinking back and thinking about the year we made that album, that it was two people who had just been told the nicest things imaginable, and we sat around making these songs.
Right.
And I know from remembering it that we sat around being like,
this
we are so,
good.
And, and like, and there are things from a production standpoint, there are songs where like we'd work on something for one day and I'd be like,
smashed it.
Done.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like, again, it's like, I would tell people not to overthink stuff, but I don't think that's not overthinking it. I think it was a kind of a...
smelling right fart.
Yeah, just sort of feeling really full of yourself or cocky.
Which I think was... it can be fine. Again, it's totally fine. It's just that I think for that one, we didn't... we just didn't put that much into it.
We didn't push ourselves in a way.
That's why there's like 16...
Nobody needs that many songs. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of where the fear comes in. So I think fear shows itself on that album in hindsight. Because I listen to this album now, and I think about the person, the people who are making Happier, and I'm like, I don't
know. You're so onto something. Because it's true that as much as Happier Than Ever was coming from this place of like, we're so good, we can, you know, this sounds so good, we are so good.
Yeah.
It was also, at least for me, like, not knowing at all who I was or who I was.
Identity crisis album.
And what's interesting is that Hit Me Hard and Soft is almost the reverse of that, where we were making it and it was like, you know, we were kind of like this the whole time, like, I don't know if we're making anything good. Like, this might be terrible.
Right.
And then now when I think about it, I'm like, yeah, but I'm comfortable in who I am now. And I feel like I know who I am now. I think that this album is like the biggest... example of, or not example, but I think this is like the most me thing that I've ever made. And I think that it's so purely me and not any sort of character, really.
Which was hard to do. Mm-hmm. We were brutal the whole year we were making this.
Oh my God.
About like drilling deeper into the essence of like who are you as a person.
Otherwise, like, second guessing it.
Because otherwise, why do it, right? At the end of the
why
day.
Why do it?
What's the most simple reason to show up again, to make another album?
100%.
I know. I think what was cool also about the making of this one was that we started working on it before we were, like, told to. And that was, like, a conscious Phineas thing. Like, he was like, hey, we should, like, make some music before anybody is like, hey, you know, you should probably get to it, you know? And I think that that made it so that we could be creative and be, have not, don't have, not have like this like pressure and like kind of people talking in our ears and our heads. And I think that that was really nice.
It's like, it's a really, and I don't know if you meant it this way, but it's a really shrewd kind of psychological twist on how you approach your music, because it kind of takes you back to before.
Yeah.
Without having to talk about it, without having to go, man, wouldn't it be great if we could just go back to when it was so easy? The amount of times I've spoken to artists and they're like, man, sometimes I just wish I could go back to when it was just a simpler time. And as soon as you say that, you can't. But if you unlock it in a way by saying, hey, we can just start.
Yep.
We just do it.
We just do it.
What we've always done is we do a song and basically finish it and move on and do another song and basically finish it and do that over and over. And then, you know, by the time an album is done, there's songs that are like over a year old and then songs that are like a month old. And you're like, well, the listener is going to think this is all one, you know, this all came out in the same... was created at the same time, but really it's like kind of doing this. Mm. And what was really different this time around, which was extremely frustrating but very rewarding, was that we really did not do that. We kind of went against our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And like what we did was we would, and this was like Phineas's idea, which I really am grateful that he came up with that, because what we would do is we would be in here and we would come up with some idea, and as soon as it would be like, he'd be like, all right, let's do something else. Let's put this away and let's like work on something else. And so you'd be like creating, hit a little lull, and as soon as that would happen, he's like, all right, this one.
Or give you some room to be excited about it still.
I know, but then it made it so that we didn't have a full song to listen to for
months.
That's really tricky. That's a tricky decision to make.
Yes.
Because you have to make sure that at the point where you come back together, in a particular Billy, that she's going to be as excited about it in that moment as she was a month ago mm-hmm. or 2 months ago. And not, you're risking that, man. What if she comes back and she's like, oh, God, I don't know, that vocal doesn't feel right to me anymore, or I've lost the feeling of this.
I think you're totally right. And part of that, maybe in a perverse way, was like, let's be that cutthroat. If she is not interested in this in 3 weeks,
wow,
then
it was almost,
let's
yeah,
give
it was
up.
Almost the reverse.
And there were a couple, there were
I'm
totally,
applauding you, bro, because that is
it was a great idea.
In a couple instances, there were things where we'd like work on it and be very amped on the day and come back to it and go like,
For the song Blue, so there's a whole backstory on that song.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people know.
No, just going reverse. I love that.
Very,
okay, where
very
we start,
excited.
Let's start at the end.
Well, I just bring it up because we really wanted to rewrite everything but the chorus. And we didn't really want to redo the whole song. We kind of just wanted to like have the hook and like some sort of verse. But we made that song when I was 14 and Ocean Eyes had just come out. Phineas was like 18. And anyway, the lyrics have just kind of aged, whatever. We just wanted to rewrite them for lots of reasons. And there was one day that we sat here and we rewrote those lyrics for like 6 hours straight.
We wrote several verses.
And we wrote many verses and many versions of each verse. And it was so tedious and hard. And we did not take a break. And we were like, no, 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 we need to rewrite it. Like, we'll get there. Mm-hmm. And we eventually finished it. And I was driving home. And you and I were like, I'm so glad we did that. And when I was driving home and I listened to it, and I was like, these are like some of the worst lyrics you have ever written. And that's a kind of example of not taking time with it.
Yeah.
And being like, no, 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 just.
Gotta push
you
it.
Know? And sometimes that can be great, but sometimes it's very clear that it's like, oh, I need a second.
It's so interesting that song, that the first half of that song is like, it's like an end credits. It's like, all these little moments, these phrases, you know, open up the door and like,
that, so
birds
that
of
verse,
a feather, and it's just
well, that,
whoa,
so
I'm
the
still
verse
here.
That we ended up writing references every single song on the album. So even if you can't, if it's not like super obvious, it's still a reference.
This is before you end the album with one of the biggest downers of one of the best albums ever created. Such a downer end. Such a downer.
Well, okay, wait. Let me explain.
Am I wrong?
It's
so funny to think about it that way.
I want to explain Blue really quick for those that don't know. Basically, the first kind of quarter of that song is a song that Phineas and I made when I was 14 and he was 18, called True Blue. And for, like, the first concerts we ever did, like, remember we did, like...
Played it at, it's a school night.
We did it school night and, like, Tenants of the Trees or some nonsense. Like, played it at different little clubs. Before I had really anything out, I had, like, maybe Ocean Eyes out, maybe not even anything else.
Yeah.
But we kind of just put it away and never...
There's a bunch of references to it in the doc.
Right.
On the album,
right,
we're like, maybe we just put True Blue on the album.
We were like, gonna put it out, but we never did because it just didn't, it kind of aged out of what we wanted to be making. And years went by, and sometimes
we stopped talking about it completely.
We completely never brought it up.
And then we were working on the second album.
At some point, well, we were working on the second album, and then separately, paused that part. Mm. On the second album, we were working on all the songs that are in that one, plus a song called Born Blue, which is like a completely different thing than True Blue. It wasn't even in the thought of it. Mm. And that was a song that was like written about a very specific
thing
that we want, whatever. But that was going to be on Happier Than Ever. And we kind of just like couldn't really crack it. And it didn't really...
It was a time thing. It was a crunch time thing
there
where we were...
No more crunch
time. We picked 16 songs to be on the album.
16 and that's not... That's
and we
not
had things we loved about Born Blue.
But there was only like a verse. Like we barely made that song.
You don't have time to finish at this point.
Yes.
Everybody,
no,
let's go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've got the 16, album's done.
So we did the same thing. We took it and we went like, bink, bye. And never thought about it again. And then in 2022, I remember like doing my laundry or something alone and... I don't know, I was like on TikTok or something, and suddenly True Blue has been just like leaked. Like,
can I just ask you how you reacted in that moment in the laundry? If you could take us to that exact moment where
I
you
just
see
was
it.
Like, I was like, well, this is like, I don't like the way that, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like, it's an unfinished thing that I never wanted to come out.
Yeah.
Whatever, I'm not complaining, whatever, because it was kind of cool after a second. I mean, I was like, I had my initial, like, oh, God, they fucking stole my shit again.
Yeah.
And then I was like, whatever, it's kind of cool, whatever. And then...
But you started to appreciate it. This is the other thing.
And I started to appreciate it. And then I was like, True Blue. I haven't listened to that in so long. So I go on YouTube and I'm like, Billie Eilish, True Blue. And I find all the rips of it. I just couldn't stop listening to this song. I didn't even have a version. I didn't even have the original version.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just was like, dude. I remember hitting Phineas up and I was like, this song is actually like really got something. And I see it now. Like, I didn't see it for many years and now I see it. And so when we were working, we kind of came in here and we just tried to rework it. And it took a second.
The verses never felt right again.
The verses never felt right. And we kind of just we couldn't really crack it. And then we were just doing it one day and then Phineas started changing the chords and I started just singing
Born Blue.
And then we kind of had this like realization like, oh, you know what would be cool? We took both of these old songs
that resurrected them,
completely different parts of our lives, and resurrected them and made them into one song called Blue, and rewrote the verse and then wrote the rest of Blue, of Born Blue.
So
and then,
Born Blue is the second half of that song where it slows down and it gets, that's the downer.
That's right.
That's the downer.
That's the downer.
And then we tied both of those together and added the motif, the string motif that
which
had
is
become.
So beautiful.
And the string motif, if you haven't noticed, is the melody from the bridge of The Greatest.
Yeah.
Which is also in Skinny, which starts the album.
Yeah.
So then it also ends the album.
And let's not forget that Blue starts where
Bittersweet
leaves off.
Ends,
yeah, we ended Bittersweet with the melody of the beginning of True Blue,
yeah.
And then it goes into it. It kind of became like...
This is just Sgt. Pepper, isn't it?
Yeah,
yes.
For sure. I mean, I really, like, we had a lot
we
of
really
conversations
wanted to make an album.
Going into this about
album.
How satisfying... I mean, listen, here's the deal. Your attention span is what it is. It's not... I think people throw a lot of flack at kids and society and the modern... you know, style of consuming anything. I don't think attention spans have gotten shorter. I think the things we're consuming have changed a lot. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
And so to me, if we're going to make a 44-minute album and expect people to have the attention span that they had in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s, let's make an album that is made with the same level of care and attention.
It's true.
An album
that was
like
happening
stimulating.
Then.
But it's kind of true. Like, if you think about, like, the way that we consume television shows, if it's great, like, if it's truly great, we're going to watch it all the way through.
We all watch.
No, that's so true.
Nobody complains about something amazing being too long.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
what's also great about this is it's concise in terms of the number of songs, but these songs stretch out and live with themselves and know themselves beautifully. In fact, one of the only concise moments is the first song.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, I mean, that's a very concise message, right, that you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much I love about that song. I said to someone here before, I don't know if you're making up with yourself or breaking up with us. I think it's probably both.
Wow. Wow. Beautiful way to put it, Zane.
I think it's probably both, you know, and I think it's captured the bittersweetness of both.
Mm.
There's a bittersweet experience of getting to know yourself again. There's a bittersweet experience of saying, hey, everything has a season.
I know.
And it's just, oh my God, it's so great. You know, but the old me is the real me, and maybe it's still me, and I think she's pretty. Must have been quite an impactful moment for you, just realizing, just seeing those words on paper or putting them on wherever they need to go.
Yeah. That song was, I mean, that was like the first full song that we wrote for the album. And it was, do you remember that song was like born out of kind of us having a weird, our lives were really different and mm-hmm. I was kind of going through something and Phineas, like it was just, we were in like a very different place.
Out of sync.
Really out of sync.
Yeah.
And we were working during that, but we couldn't, I mean, we were coming up with like pieces of stuff. And of course, now when I look back at what we were coming up with, it was
great.
It was the chorus of Lunch and bridge of Chihiro. But at the time, it didn't,
it was fragments.
There was nothing to tell us what was that it was going to be great eventually. And so we felt kind of like, what are we doing? Like, I don't know how we're going to do this. And I remember there was one night, it was like raining or something, and Phineas and I had like
a big fight
about
context and subject matter was the big fight. We'd been writing these fragments of stuff, and I felt
could not.
I felt, and again, like this is, I've been proven wrong over and over, but this was the jag I was on that night. Was like, I was like, subject wise, I'm not being let into what you're actually feeling. And I think that there are real guards up. Oftentimes in your life, you're going through the thing that you're going to write about later. Mm-hmm. And that was for sure happening to Billy at that point in time. Mm-hmm. Where I'd be like, what's this about? And she'd be like, nothing. And I remember, like, we just had this argument of me being like, just say how you feel and let's write a song about whatever you're scared about feeling.
Well, and also, not to throw you under the bus, but Phineas was like, I don't like doing this anymore. I don't want to write music right now. Like,
that's true.
You know, and this was really scary for me at the time because, as you know, I used to be like, hate making music. Don't want to make it. Don't like making it. It's frustrating. It's irritating. I love having made it. I love performing it. I love, you know, when it's good. But I really have always struggled with the process. And this was when
you were enjoying the process.
I was kind of finally enjoying the process. And Phineas was like, I would rather be doing anything else right now. And it was very interesting because I saw myself in that. So I was like, I have felt that way. But now, and you have always been the thing that keeps the ship moving. And now you feel that way. And like, what does that mean for us? And what are we going to do? And I think Phineas also had this kind of totally understandable thing just repeating in his head of like, I have nothing to say. How could I say anything with the life that I live that anyone could relate to that I wouldn't sound like a huge
pompous douche. I think that, and also when we're talking about being out of sync, like my whole strength as a collaborator with any artist, and it's always been kind of innate with Billy because we've shared so much, is I do have to understand that person to be able to feel like I'm providing something.
It's a really valuable moment, though, for the two of you, because on the one hand, you get to actually acknowledge something which you probably needed to hear from him, which is like, I don't have all the answers and I'm not here to protect the process. Like, I'm struggling with this, which is big for your growth, too. It's like, well, hang on. I got to ask myself how much I really want to do this and can I bring him back into this in a good way? The other part of it as well is that, you know, you are now in a situation where you get to control how much you unveil until you're ready.
Right.
Because you've been so pressured to tell us your truth, Billy. You're successful now. Write another song, Billy. Make another album, Billy. Force feed us your emotions, Billy, you know? And it's like, you're like, hang on, I don't know if I'm ready, from what he's telling, you're telling me, to actually share that. Yeah, it's a crazy.
Well, and also I think that it's really hard to see what's going on until it's over in a lot of ways. And I think for me, you know, he was like, just be honest with me. Tell me what's going on. And I literally was like, I don't even know. I don't even know how to describe. Mm. I don't know what's good or bad right now. Mm. Like, I can't tell. And then it's like, when you look back on it, you go, oh, that's what was going on. And that's what I was feeling. But I will say that his kind of, Phineas also, like, really made a big effort in the process to, like, let me kind of lead the way in a lot of ways.
100%.
And Phineas would, and that was so terrifying at first because, you know, we've been making music for years and I kind of, I've been shy and not very quick with it. And like, I've never felt like confident as a songwriter. And he is so good that it's like hard to compete with, honestly. And he would sit there and kind of be quiet.
And play the guitar chord over and over.
And not say anything or give any ideas. And I'd be like, oh my God, like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do
really
right now.
What's going on in here?
And it pushed me to, like, actually do so much. And so for this album, this was the most I've ever written.
Contributed.
And I did some production stuff even. And I did all my own vocals. And
The reason behind that for me was that her ideas had become more and more concrete. She just had more.
They weren't good before.
Well, she'd, you know, like, it's the difference between somebody giving a really good suggestion and somebody giving her, like, a full plan, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was also a place of, like, there were years, if I go back to the first couple years of, like, co-writing with anyone, like, I wanted to be useful so bad. Mm-hmm. I wanted Billy to come over and feel like I had value. And I think oftentimes, and I've worked with other people like this, and I always give them the same piece of advice of like, if you steamroll, if the best idea is going to take 10 minutes longer, shut up and let it take 10 minutes. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't rattle off 30 bad ideas in 10 minutes. I'm not saying that my ideas are all bad, but I just mean like, I really love Billy's ideas, and I don't care if she is maybe going to take a couple more minutes to think about them than my idea that is or isn't good. So I want to leave oxygen.
Yeah. That's a great way of putting it.
And so that happened, but I think it was a funny shift in our dynamic.
It was
where,
very different.
Where I'd be sitting there playing and Billy would be like, you're not even saying anything. And I'd be like, wait. And then what would happen, and it was so beautiful, and Skinny is the best example of this, is like, you wait and you wait and you wait. And then Billy says something that's so great. And then I know exactly how to help. I know exactly where the missing thing is because we're so on the same page with it.
Phineas is so good at that. Like, I'll come up with all these ideas and these lyrics and melodies that are tight and they're great. And there's like this and this and this and this. And then there's like one thing that I need. And I'm like, I really don't know what this is. And Phineas will just be like, what if you said this? And it's like the best lyric of the whole song. And actually, that line that you just brought up was that moment. It was like,
I knew exactly what we were
trying
both
to say.
Feeling and how she was feeling, and it was just kind of a rhyme structure.
Well, and also like that line is the kind of thing that is for
it's a
me.
Bar it's, is what it is.
It's a bar. That song is just bars.
Bar after bar after bar.
But like, I don't know. That's the kind of thing that. There's some things that are really hard to say about yourself.
Yeah.
I was really struggling with this weird, just like, I don't know, everything was weird in my life. And Phineas was like, I was just talking about myself and talking about like who I used to be and the way I used to look and things. And then, and Phineas just was like, the old me is still me and maybe the real me. And I think she's pretty, you know? And I was like, oh, I do think she's pretty.
Here's the thing about lunch, right? We've all read the interview that's in existence right now, and it's a great opening line, and it grabs you, and it's just like, boom, check it out. It's a metaphor for me. It's just about taking control, isn't it, about your life?
Right.
Literal, but also metaphorical.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in that one.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, one of the verses was written after like a conversation I had with a friend, and they were telling me about this like just complete animal magnetism they were feeling, and I was like, I just was like, ooh, I'm gonna pretend to be them for a second and just write. I don't know, there's a lot of metaphors and a lot of
there's also some real power dynamic going on there. There's an exercise of actual power going on there, which is really interesting to me, because it's like, hey, I've played the innocent and trying to figure it all out, and I've tried to make myself look older than I am on the last album and figure out how I am. Right, but on this record it's like, hang on, I'm gonna buy you stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna buy the clothes. Yeah. And I'm gonna leave them on the and by the way,
could buy her so much stuff killed me. That was
such a good line.
Such a like,
it's a craving, not a crush.
But the buy her so much stuff was such a funny, like,
it's just such a like
actually a feeling, right? Like, I could
buy her so much stuff. Oh my God. Oh, think about all the things I could buy.
Yeah. And that line has very little to do with money and a lot to do with just like wanting to give somebody stuff.
The line that is like, bad guy grew up and got money, is like, I'll put the clothes.
Oh, yeah.
That's just control.
Right. Yeah. I'll run a shower for you.
And
like,
leave the clothes. Yeah.
Clothes on the counter.
On the counter for you. Exactly.
And then, if I'm allowed.
Exactly. And then it's like, oh, but hang on. It's all cool. Like, it's such a fascinating song.
Thanks.
And it's one of those moments where I think it's you at your playful best. Playing the character. That's why I brought it back. It is the character. And
it's
everyone's
so, true.
So obsessed with the legitimacy of the lyrics, but it's like, hang on, you're missing the point. This is all.
I know. That's kind
this
of.
Is the other, this is the other, you know, not to compare art or to besmirch stuff that we're proud of. But I think one of our big goals on this record when we were looking back at everything we'd ever made was like, I think if you can be funny, you can be so much more serious. I think if you are always this serious, it starts to lose meaning and stop impacting you.
And then your vulnerability is like, if you're only ever being vulnerable,
if you're not dynamic,
like, you can't, you know.
Yeah, and I think that like one of the things that I'm so happy about in retrospect when I listen to When We All Fall Asleep is all this
humor
that we were trying to hit. And then it's
I think that Happier Than Ever was one of the ones where we were taking ourselves a little too seriously.
A lot of thought.
It's a lot of fun.
Again, this is the deal. It's like, there's stuff I'm very grateful to on that album, but we had no interest in trying to tell jokes.
Yeah, and this is that thing that, you know, people say about, like, when you start to embrace cringe, you're so much happier.
Yeah.
You have so much more fun.
But we talked a little bit about Happier Than Ever in the last conversation. It didn't make it in because we wanted to focus on the song.
Sure.
But I think I said something to you on the lines of, like, that album was sacrificial in the most beautiful way. It gave its life for you to continue making records.
I mean, I said a couple months ago that Happier Than Ever walked so that Hit Me Hard and Soft.
That's right. You know, and
really
think about the world that you were in when we were all in when you were making that album.
Yeah.
We were all deeply
focused. When we made Happier Than Ever, we were like, maybe we're never going to play a show again. That was like
right.
where we were
That's
at
true.
Making that album. The whole first album was like, I want Billy to run out on stage at Coachella and play bad guy.
That
was like the things that we were thinking about, you know? And I think that Happier Than Ever, we actually made from a place of, like, I mean, we haven't seen a friend in months, you know. And this album, again, was like an self-exploration. And also, like, not to sort of back catalog too much, I'm sure several years from now we'll be looking at this album in a retrospective way. And that's just the way it is. But I think that I'm glad that you're pointing all that stuff out. Like, I think Lunch to me is like... Yeah, if you can throw some jokes in there.
Totally. Because otherwise, why would you write a song? Check it out. You're a kid and you write these songs. Some of them are really honest and vulnerable. You don't know you're on the record.
Also, first song title, Skinny. Second song title, Lunch.
I didn't even pick up on that. That
funny.
Is pretty funny.
That was funny when we figured that out. Funny.
Okay, that's good.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Lol. You don't know that, you know, you're going to be on the record and the whole world's going to start listening to your songs through the context of who you actually are, and that the characters and the real human being will blur into one weird perception of
people. You lose all
this. No idea. And if you figure that out with the world watching, I wonder why anyone shows up at all.
I really wanted the songs to not be like, oh, I know what that's about.
Right.
You know, I think that we live in such a world where, like, everyone knows everything. It's true. Everyone is aware of the beef that happened and aware of the people that don't like each other and aware of this and that. People put songs out, especially in the pop world. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it necessarily, but it's just we live in a world of, like, somebody puts a song out and everyone's like, so this is who this is about. And this is the entire story of what happened. And it's like, it doesn't even give the listener a chance to interpret it how they want to interpret it and how they naturally hear it. And that I find really frustrating. I don't want to hear a song that I'm like, oh my God. Every single lyric, I'm like, my God.
And
like, this is about that person that I know exactly.
No, it can be gross.
I think you shouldn't listen to Lunch and think about who Billy wants to eat for lunch. You should think about who you want to eat for lunch. That's the whole deal. Like, that's the whole deal.
That's a metaphor, y'all. That's not like...
So I say it's a metaphor.
But I just mean that it's like, I don't...
It's not literal.
I don't listen to a song about love and think about being in love. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't listen to The Luckiest by Ben Folds and think about his wife.
Yeah,
I think about who I'm in love with.
Yeah.
That's the deal.
What you've done together as producers on this record is so exceptional. When the ARP comes in and I hear the ARP for the first time, it's like, damn, Vinny's got the ARP out. Shit. shit, I just got the arpa. Why am I not surprised? It's the most beautiful sounding arpa I've ever heard in my entire life. It's so perfect. I know it's going to drop off a cliff and end immediately. I can't wait for that moment. Right? And it's
so funny,
it,
too.
It just, to me, what it
that
says.
That was the one of the coolest moments of the whole album.
When you were there?
When we created that.
Yeah.
Can you describe that? Because I know how I felt when I heard it.
I don't even remember the, it was multiple moments because there's multiple parts and it kind of, it turned into like many things, but
that song has no discernible structure, you know, apart from the open up the door at the beginning and the end, everything else is a freestyle.
I was literally, yesterday I was plotting out the music video and I was like, okay, wait, this part, okay, wait, but then there's this part.
No.
But then, okay, wait, but then, so much song. I mean, it's also 5 minutes long. I don't remember if we had the I don't know you at all thing yet, but I remember very well Phineas playing around with this production, and I had the handheld mic, and I was like improvising there, like da 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 da.
Here, grab that handheld just to show it off.
Yeah, this is the mic you record the whole album on?
This is the mic we wrote basically the entire album on. And so basically what we did, we'd never done this before either. I would sit here.
Here, I can pull up the sound if you're interested.
But this is how we wrote everything. And I actually so I filmed pretty much the entire making of the album on this camera and my phone. Mm-hmm. I was just watching the footage back, and it was so amazing to see. And there's this one, many videos, but there's this one video where I'm sitting there like this, holding this, and Phineas is coming up with what is one of the coolest produced songs of ours, in my opinion.
Hands down.
And he's just like making it up, and he's like, you know, that one part. Yeah. And I literally go, I'm just improvising. And I watched I don't have any memory of this. And I just went like, and that's when you found me. I was waiting in the garden. When you told me you were serious, were you serious? It's like, just came right out. And I had no idea. And then I immediately was like, open up the door. Can you open up the door? And Phineas was like,
Open up the door was a huge win.
That
right
was a win.
Away.
I have a video of the making of
and it comes up a few times in the album for that reason. It's a beautiful image because it's actually such a pure request. It's such a simple request.
I know.
And it's ambiguous. And I love an ambiguous line.
Yeah. In my head, your childhood bedroom, then you saw the world like on fast forward.
Yeah.
No time to have fun, really. Just like, have this award. Just throwing them at you.
Right.
And then it's like, when I heard that up, I was like, shit, they're going to actually have fun. Like, it sounded like this could be the beginning of you going out and going clubbing and having a good time and living some life. And that's what I got out of that song.
A big part of, I would say, 40. You want me to turn this
on? So this is how we recorded the vocals of this song.
Yeah.
All the vocals on Chihiro were in the room with this, with like the feedback from the speakers in the room. So like, I actually have.
So you actually have the, if you separate everything, the vocal has the feedback.
I literally have them all. I have the isolated.
They're very noisy.
I have the isolated vocals from the song, and it's basically the song because the speakers were just, we didn't use headphones. We were just kind of.
We didn't invent this, by the way.
No, not at all. But it was extremely useful. And it's a really, really, really useful writing
tool for
me, especially. Like, it's a lot easier for me to perform than
you can
to
slap like this
and
has verb
this
on
is,
it
like, doing both
yeah. And then you can also put like a bunch of delay. I think this song also had a bunch of delay on it, Birds of a Feather, which was also a lot of it written on a handheld, even though we ultimately re-recorded those
it
vocals.
Was all written on a handheld.
But you put some delay on it.
Video.
I mean, I was going out a lot on the, you know, over the course of making this album, and it was super. I'm such a dork that I never, you know, been invited to anything cool, and I was really enjoying, the music I loved through a sort of a lens of dancing to it. You know,
yeah.
I've never made music that I'm then going to go dance to ever.
Love that. The main thing we would say every time we would make anything is like, is this danceable?
Wait, and you mean before we ever heard from anything from you two?
Like Ocean Eyes.
Literally dance classes.
Can we choreograph a dance class? Are the dancers going to like this? Like that's all I used to think about. And then for many years, it kind of became more things than that and whatever. And I kind of forgot that. And I feel like during this, I was like, we need to go back to that.
It's great. It opens up the door to a whole world, and it just
I feel like, hey, I don't have to be afraid anymore. That art just signals a whole new wide open space.
We're also merciless with time. We're, you know, if a song that's 3.5 minutes long is more concise and better at 2 minutes, 50 seconds, like, let's get it there.
Yeah.
But I think the fun part about the dance thing, and again, like, I don't want to act like I'm reinventing the wheel here, but it was an appreciation for these long pieces because you're dancing to them.
You know, it being able to stretch out and collaborate in different ways, and not just through the lens of the words and the performance, but also to work together on how you can make the instrumentation just breathe and live.
Yeah,
it's been such a beautiful part of this record. But you know, then you hit us with Birds of a Feather. Okay, Birds of a Feather is, like, hands down the best pop song you've ever made, in my opinion. And it is such a joy to listen to. It makes me happy and cry at the same time. It reminds me so much of, like, Wham and George Michael. It's like the best Wham song ever made. That they've never made.
Much love to George Michael.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? That moment when, and also we hear you sing, you reach a place in that vocal where you go, to the day, and you go there. It's like pop yearning. I haven't heard you go.
Yeah.
I've never heard you sing like that.
Well, and also that ending where I'm like,
and you drift off in the space.
And I just kept going. That's like the highest I've ever belted in my life. And I remember being in here and being
alone.
I was in here alone in the dark period of time. And I was just like, I'm going to get this right. And I was recording that, like, till the day that I die, till the light leaves my eyes. And then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try something. Okay.
Take it home.
Till the day. And I'm like, I die. I could just hold it, or I could go, till the day I die. And then I was like, dude, I'm gonna have
you
to
take
keep
it home.
Going.
You
and
take
I
it home.
Literally was like, da. And I just was like, kept going. And then I was like, I got this one. I'm gonna just hit the higher one. And this is a girl that, like, I could not belt until I was literally 18. Like, I couldn't physically do it. And I can't, I'm like so proud of that. I remember coming home and being like, Mom!
I came downstairs. And this is also the fun thing about, like gradually over the last album, I was teaching her a little bit of this, but I was like, she has such a good ear. And I'm just a, like, puppet when it comes to comping her vocal because she's so meticulous. And I can comp a vocal, no problem. I've been doing it forever. But, like, she got better and better at knowing, like, I liked this take and I liked this word from this take and, like, this word.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just was like, well, let me teach you how to do this. It's not that hard. And so I taught her how to record herself and how to comp herself. Mm-hmm. I'd get a call to come downstairs. She's like, something's wrong. I'd come downstairs and fix it. But one of the reasons I did it is because I've always recorded alone. And there's stuff that I am just not brave enough to do in front of somebody else. And it's like, I know I'm her brother, but it's like,
oh, I could never have done that with anyone in the room.
Yeah, and also probably some other take in there where you were like, I hate this, even though you got the one take that you killed. I think that really shines on this album, is like a person, even without their collaborator in the room, doing the bravest thing ever. And
can
then
I play this really quick?
Yeah, yeah. So good.
I was really like.
So in that moment before you go up that final note, right, which is high.
Ooh.
High.
Boy.
Are you, because you've held the second, the penultimate note for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in the moment saying to yourself, you just gotta have to go for it?
Yeah. I was like, I'm just gonna try it. I was like, I might blow it, but I'm gonna just have to try it. And I did it.
Okay. Oof. Wildflower.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah, tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, Wildflower is I mean, I have thoughts, but I don't want to try not to be too literal with them. But first of all, it's one of the most brilliantly complete songs you've ever made together. The whole way that you sign off on, start and sign off, and everything in between is pretty flawless in terms of capturing a really complex feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It has one of the most devastatingly sad lines about love in it of all time, which is, I know that you love me, you don't need to remind me. That cut me in pieces, because the reminding you is the point.
I know.
It's the point. I know you don't need me to tell you, but I want to tell you because it's what makes you want to tell me, and that's the connection.
Uh-huh.
To cut someone off and say, I already know, you don't have to, is like, well, what the fuck is left?
My interpretation, again, which I love everyone's interpretation of lines like this, to me it was, that's not going to change how I feel. I already know this, and I'm not waiting for you to say it. I know it implicitly, and
same thing, but it's not going to change the way I feel. I feel something for someone else.
Yeah.
And well, it's more like I'm not asking for reassurance. I am 100% confident that you love me. I know this. That's not the problem. The problem is this thing that I can't shake. But it's really interesting because it was kind of one-sided. Like, it was... that's why it was really important to write for me, because I actually came up with the I see her in the back of my mind all the time, that with that melody, I came up with that like as soon as I felt it, like this was like I wasn't even writing much at the time, and that line I came up with.
Remember that you came?
I came in here and I was like, dude, I have this line and I don't. But of course, I couldn't really get what I needed because I wasn't being super honest with myself and whatever. But what was so, like, important about the song is that it was a feeling that I was experiencing that I think I was alone in. And I think that the person that the song is kind of to, and then the person I'm also talking about, I don't know if they had been experiencing any of those feelings at all. But I couldn't stop thinking about it, you know? Yeah. And it's kind of like that whole song is kind of like a girl code song. It's like a breaking girl code thing. And I think that's one of the most challenging places.
Is that where the line got across the line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really interesting, that line as well, because accountability has been a through line in your music.
Yeah, yeah.
Holding
yeah.
people accountable as well as your own behavior.
Yeah.
But that's one of the first times I've ever heard you actually acknowledge a flaw.
Like I know. That. Yeah, I did something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel anxious about it deeply.
Yeah.
And it's not a song about cheating at all. There's like no cheating
involved. It doesn't feel like there's any physical activity or any in that regard, but it definitely internally.
It has nothing to do. The thing is, it's about something that wasn't even bad. Like, it was just something I couldn't get out of my head, you know? Mm. I love that song. That is like...
Well, it's in the middle. All the best songs.
It's in the middle. It's in the middle. And it was also like, I don't know, we wrote it. It kind of helped me realize.
It was one of the first full songs we'd written. It was like really one of the first couple.
But it really helped me realize like what I was feeling and what I was going through and being like, oh, maybe this is actually affecting me more than I thought.
Yeah, because then the idea of I see her in the back of my mind like a fever. You know, the funny thing is we never forget our fevers as kids. At least I
really don't.
You really don't forget your fevers. It's like, wow, I remember when I had a fever when I was 3 years old. You know, it's one of the earliest memories I had. And so it's a very visceral image, the idea of this thing you cannot put out.
I love that song for so many reasons. And I think what I love about it is that it's such a like tortured, overthinky song. It's like a song that's just like, dude, I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it just kind of... I feel like it's portrayed the more the song goes on, and like when I start to like sing the second chorus and like go up with it, and then it turns into this kind of bigger moment with the drums and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it comes back down, and then you have the ending chorus that's the similar as the main one. Instead, it says,
Do you see her
in the back of your mind in my eyes? Like
classic pop music turnaround, man.
Right. We had to hit him with that. And then you think it's over, and then we got a little reprise, and I was very... very happy about that.
Yeah.
I love a little outro.
An afterthought.
Afterthought. But also that happened because I just wanted like a bridge to happen underneath the like
guitars.
Did I cross the line? Because there's not much going on there. Mm-hmm. And we wrote that little bit and I was like, I think that's so beautiful that it needs to have its own, it needs to be heard on its own.
Let's talk about The Greatest. I just think that that's a song that just reflects how far you've come and where you sit now and your ability to be able to push each other.
That's a really special one for us. I think that to us, The Greatest is kind of like the heart of the album and it really completes the whole thing, I think. And also when we made it, that was like the turning point that kind of...
Everything went pretty well after that.
Everything went very well after that. It just kind of... woke us back.
It was also, we wrote it when Billy had her, like, I think Billy went from living life to understanding it in that moment.
Can you qualify what you think Phineas means by that a little bit?
I don't know. It's what I was saying earlier. It's, like, really hard to see what's going on until...
It's over.
Until after.
Yeah.
And I think that this was like the first day really that I was able to be honest. And I was like scared to be honest before that. And also, you know, it's really hard to feel hurt by someone who you love so much and who is a like a person you'd like almost die for, like a person who you really have no ill will to, like complete, like, I don't know, it's a tough thing.
But when you realize you're willing to go somewhere that someone else isn't, it's so devastating. And everybody has been in some dynamic in their life or their relationship like that. But like, when you realize that you'd, you know, sacrifice and wear yourself out and compromise all these things, and you realize that you're, the person you're in love with is not making those sacrifices and is not in that area. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what that song is about. It's like, so kind of like, you don't even want to know how lonely this is.
Yeah, because that's the true nature of the song. It's such a journey. It's like when you're at your best, the two of you, you're able to take something really complex and human that takes people books to write and put it into 4 or 5 minutes of a song. It's what really sets you apart. And I think that is the highest point you've been able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that is really what that song is about. And I think the ending of it, that's my favorite part of the song, is that ending, because I think it's infuriating when you look at a person and you look at all these things that the person is so amazing at. Somebody that's like magnetic and really loving and really special, and just the areas where they're in their own way.
That bridge is, I think, my favorite bridge we've made. And then those lyrics, which is, they're so simple, and they're some of my favorites in the world. And also the way that I sang them and the notes they are is... It's so, to me, every time I listen to it, it's so gut-wrenching.
It's so emotional.
And cathartic. Just, I loved you, and I still do. Just wanted passion from you.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I just wanted back what you
just wanted what I gave you.
When I gave you.
What I gave you. And then I waited and waited.
I alluded this a little bit, and now we're going to go there. L'amour. L'amour is brutal.
Yeah, I know.
L'amour is just brutal.
It's brutal in so many ways.
So many ways.
Yeah.
We got, when we were writing that, that's a good example of like, there's kernels of life in there, but the song started to exist in a way where we could see it. It had less to do with like, you know, writing about this exact experience that happened and more to do with like,
sure.
Sometimes you can see what it's like a song.
Storytelling.
A song is like archaeology. You're like, I'm gonna brush away until you see the skull of the dinosaur. I remember writing the chorus and us just being like meaner and meaner. Like it just got so mean. And then the verses were about kind of like, how do we justify how fucked up and mean that chorus is? And then the bridge is so dismissive. The bridge of L'amour. The bridge of L'amour is the opposite of the bridge of the greatest.
I know.
Like, yeah. Oh, so like, you found her. Go fall in love. Just like we were.
I don't even know if I was.
It's very out of the pocket of what we know you for.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a reason for that.
Right.
And I love all the... there's reasons for that, and I love it. And the one that I want to focus on right now, which I love, is... I love that it sounds like you're actually doing your first ever guest spot on someone else's
for sure.
Song.
It totally does.
You know what happened? And I remember this happening. Billy had come in and was like on this, like she was like juiced. She came in from the gym.
Really.
She was like, I need something to lift to or whatever.
For real.
And we made this thing. It was dun-sh-ka, and she started screaming in the mic. And we threw auto-tune on. It was so fun.
Yeah.
And we had this thing where like the melodies we liked and the vibe was so kind of outrageous. And it was a little like, we were in a pool that was not, we jumped in the neighbor's pool. You know what I mean?
Well, and also we were just, at that time, we had just come up with like random lyrics that were like totally nonsensical and not about anything.
And I remember we had this feeling once we started to kind of, because I love a production tapestry for a record. There are sound, there are like drum sounds and synths that I put across the whole album. Mm-hmm. And so things like Over Now, which is what we initially called it.
We're not putting that on the album.
I was like, we're not putting that out. And I was like, if we do, I'll reproduce it in a place where it's like, maybe it's the same tempo, but it feels more in the same wheelhouse of everything. Mm. And ultimately, like, I kept sitting with it. And I remember saying to Billy one time, I was like, the bravest thing we can do is just put it out like this. Exactly. Like, just put it out.
But crazy. Just put it, like, on the end of something that is completely different. And just have it be a little secret at the end, you know? Yeah. Not put it out as its own thing. And it was like, it's what?
For fun.
A minute and a half. And
it's
also,
so short.
It's what's funny is it's, it feels like it's part of L'Amour, but it's completely not. It's like about a completely different thing that we, because we made the original one in, I think, like October. And then we rewrote it in,
like, right before we finished. It was like one of the last things.
Over a year later.
It sort of stemmed from the album in all ways. It's just about Billy. It's not a narrative album about a fictional character or something, but we have always loved, like, songs within songs within songs. Mm-hmm. Like a thing where it's like, is this a song that the person singing this other song is listening to now? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and it kind of has that feeling. You've kind of just listened to Billy sort of sing. She's so heartbroken in The Greatest. And then she sings this song that's like the antibody of, yeah, like, you know what? Fuck you anyway. And then she
about all these different.
Yes,
like,
but then she kind of goes. She kind of goes to the club.
Yeah, you know? it's I'm ready to go out. I'm ready to have a good time. I've still got you in the back of my mind, but yes, shit, I'm gonna dance my way through this fucker.
Yeah.
And this is how it's gonna go.
Yeah.
Has it changed your approach to how you show up on other people's songs? Because that's rare, and yet when I hear it on that, I'm like, is this the start of like, there's a lot of freedom in your life right now. I get a sense that you're like, hey man, I'm not as afraid as I was.
Yeah.
And life is wide open for me.
We did a session with another artist. I did a session with another artist for the first time in 6 years.
Holy shit. When was this?
A couple weeks ago.
It was so fun.
And it was really fun. And I was really nervous because I was like,
wow,
I haven't worked with anyone but Phineas in 6 years.
That's right.
And I hated it back in the day. I really, really hated it. I hated studios. I hated collaborating. I've never done a feature.
Even when we do stuff like the Labyrinth thing, that's like a person we love who we're friendly with sort of sending us files across the internet.
Yeah, it's like a total, it's fully a pen pal situation.
And he sends it, and if we come up with nothing good, then it goes away, right?
Yeah,
this was to me, like, such a fun part of, like, being in the music business. Was like, Billy was sitting and telling me why she loved this one artist. We were watching their music videos together, and I know them. And I was texting them, and I was like, we're sitting here watching your stuff. It's so good. They were like, I'm in LA. I was like, do you want to do a day?
Did your stomach churn? Were you like, wow?
Billy's trying to get out of it. Like,
I was thinking, why are you making me do that? What are you talking about?
Billy's whole relationship with music has been so high stakes.
Yeah, bro,
I really empathize. I make stuff with people so much, and the stakes are so low in terms of, like, we make something, we noodle around, we like it or we don't, it never goes anywhere, and whatever. Billy is like sitting in front of a microphone, it's the two of us in a room, and she has to think, is that, like, I'm gonna have to go out on every stage for the next 50 years and sing this song every day.
Well, and also, you know, becoming successful at like 14 meant that music, which was for my whole childhood and all my preteen years before anything, was something that I loved so much and enjoyed thoroughly. And, you know, my friends that would sing, we would sing together and we would harmonize and do covers of stuff and record it. And I got so much joy out of that. And then it became my job and I kind of lost all my friends. And I hated working with all these, you know, grown men when I was 14, 15.
Those were not fun.
I don't know why they would have been. But, you know, I literally, like, realized a couple months ago in hanging out with my friends
and just casually playing stuff together,
being musical and making music, I was like, wait, this is my passion in life. And I love doing this so much. And also, I'm really good at it. I'm a professional musician, apparently. I'm a professional musician. I don't think about that. And I haven't enjoyed it in a really long time. And I'm like, and even when I do, when we make music, I enjoy it, but it's not for enjoyment. It's for the making of it and for the putting it out.
Oh, and to the point, like, you can enjoy something, but we take it really seriously.
It's very
serious. We want to make something great.
So I never really get to have fun with it. And so I found myself in my living room with two of my friends, and we were all just playing music, and I literally, like, was gonna cry. I was like, you guys have no idea how much this means to me. Like, the thing that everyone probably assumes is, like, something that
goes on all day, every day.
Like, I don't really get to enjoy making music like that.
The conversation seems to be flowing beautifully from one thing to the next because, yeah, the idea of being free and being able to go out there and make music that gets away from what it was, kind of what the diner sounds like to me. I think the nature of the music and I think the creepiness of the words conjures up a sense of there's an unhinged nature to this song.
Yeah.
Right,
and being
right.
human
yeah.
at its very core is kind of an unhinged experience.
That's awesome.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're really diving into something that defies any conventional logic or understanding in this song. It's like, why am I even in this song?
Going on here?
What is going on?
Yeah. Well,
that
and
was
I
the
think
point.
It was, yeah. And I think that now that I think about it, it's a big, it was like a very unperfected song. Like it was, we kind of, it didn't really change much from where it started.
And in fact, we kept cleaning it up too much and then putting dirt all over it.
We would clean it up and be like, this is better when it's raw.
Even the actual sound of the beat, one of Billy's cool, like, lo-fi things that we do is, like, sometimes I'll be like, do you want me to bounce this today? She'll go, no, it's okay. And she'll film the computer screen.
That's what I did for all these.
Oh, amazing. Gosh. So you're listening to it through
iPhone?
iPhone coming through the speakers.
It's not even a voice memo. I'll take a video of the screen.
No, I love
and
that.
And the slap of the room has a lot of life.
Yeah.
And so Billy would, then we'd be listening to, then I would bounce it. And Billy would be like, it sounds really sterile. Like it doesn't have a slap.
Yeah, I want it to sound like my phone.
And so
I've done that.
So the beat on that song, I reamped. So I like set up mics in the room and then played it through the room and then reamped it.
Well, also a big thing, which is also on Over Now, which is the end of L'Amour, is the handheld mic we were talking about had this like delay on it.
Yeah.
And when I was recording, at one point I put the mic down and it was picking up.
Yeah, it was feedback.
There was a lot of feedback, and I was like, tight. And I just hit record and like let it
stood next
bounce
to the speaker.
And so that's why the beat's like,
guitarist does feedback, just holding the mic next to the speaker.
The production where it started, you know, we kind of had fun with it and we came up with all that weird stuff. And then I remember kind of over time, I was like, is this like too like silly? Like, is this not serious enough? Like, you know, I kind of felt like it was, this is weird to say, but it was almost like Billie Eilish-y.
Billie Eilish type beat.
Yeah, Billie Eilish type beat. I was like, is this a little like that? Maybe. But I was like, it's kind of tight, though, the way that that works.
You know, as a body of work, we couldn't ask for more truth and honesty and also character development, which, as we've established, you're so good at. In the grand scheme, are you too close to be able to identify yet? But what does this album afford you in the future? Where does it allow you to go?
Great question.
You know?
I have a part answer before I feel like you should give a more real answer. But I was like, I saw this interview years ago with Fiona Apple that was an old interview even then. It wasn't present day, where she was like, you should finish an album and feel like you've got nothing left. And I super felt that way when we finished it. And it's been done
That's
now.
That's our whole thing.
Yeah, it's been done now for 5 months, I guess, about. Yeah, we just felt like we'd given it everything we had. And that felt great. Like, it felt great to not have stuff still on the table. And I think that we have, like, you know, we did a session a couple weeks ago and we have, you know, more stuff planned. But I think exactly what Billy's talking about, like, I think we're going to, like, be jamming and having a kind of an experimental, you know, fun experience. Like,
working
I think
with other people.
Well, I was going to say that, are you able to let each other go in the loveliest way possible now, knowing that when you come back, it's still there for you if you want it to
I think it's like not even letting each other go, but it's opening up to like more, you know. And I think like Phineas works with all kinds of different other artists and writes with a bunch of different people, and I think that it makes him
I come back better. From the very beginning of working with Billy, like I remember just to like the first example I can think of was like I did some session with somebody the day before Billy and I made Copycat. And I, like, was suddenly on the spot with this artist.
Right.
And they were like, I want drums like this, right? And I had to do this thing. And then I put this synth on it. And it was, like, all this stuff that then the next day when Billy and I sat down to work, I was like, do you want to, like, here's some of the stuff I was sort of working on yesterday. And I think that yeah, you just gain all this experience, you know? And again, like, I'd love to be a part of, you know, all the steps in between with Billie if she wants, but I'm also like, all of it's good. If Billie and her friends are sitting around, you know, especially like singing anything that you love or just making stuff up, it's like, it's so exciting. Like, this was the album I was always trying to make. You know what I mean? And I really feel, I'm so proud of it. And I'm proud of it in a way that, like, I've been proud of things a couple times where, like, my opinion of it does not hinge on anybody. It's so meaningful to hear that you love it. But, like, if I heard that privately you were like, I don't really get it, I'd be like, I love Zane and that's fine. And I love this album. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it's like, it's so kind of a validation from within of like, I love how making this album felt. I love how listening to this album feels.
You know, when we first went into playing it for people and whoever, like, I was really nervous and I genuinely had either no idea what people were going to think. And if anything, I thought, like, people might not. Like, I don't know if they'll like it. And, you know, I remember playing it for the label when it was not done, but there were pieces and...
A lot of it was done. Like, 7 or 8 songs were done.
And, but of course, we were like, oh, don't do it. But I remember, like, John Janik, who is the head of my label, was like, this is the best thing you've ever made.
And I want to give a shout out to John and Justin because I remember when it had... When we'd finished it, we were playing mixes. You know what I mean? Like, production was done. And it was, like, the first time they were hearing several of the songs and only the second time ever that they were hearing the rest of it. And we'd never said, we'd love to know your thoughts. Yeah. We were just like, here's the record. And Billie was, like, fucking with the lighting until it was the perfect color of blue. Like, that was what we were on. Mm. And everyone was really nice. We sat there and played it as loud as can be for everybody.
Yeah.
And I sent John a text afterward, and I owe this to Justin and John, which is, I was like, it is not lost on me that you let us operate this way.
Yeah,
because first of all, we know that most labels do not operate that way. Mm-hmm. Most people do not operate that way with their artists, where they want to hear it. You know what I mean? They're fronting
they
you.
They want to hear it and give notes.
They're fronting you money. They're about to commit a huge amount of resources
and
whatever.
It's a relationship.
It's a relationship. And sometimes people have to feel like they were involved to even like something. Sometimes people... If you catch them off guard, they're like, whoa, it's done. It's really, you know what I mean? They have to be there. You have to hold their hand.
Yeah.
And I also said to John, I was like, we never would have been able to make this album if you'd done that to us. If we'd been having to give you quarterly reports, if we'd been having to like keep updating you on it and sending you mixes, we would have, like, we had to make this album in the dark, quietly, alone, and to a degree that Billie talked about earlier in the day, we weren't even bouncing it to each other.
That's what I mean.
Like,
you
know, was silent.
If not the first question I asked you is, what would you have said to each other if you'd walked in 8 years ago, whenever it was, into their bedroom and you were making their debut album? And I think you've done it. I think you're still there, but you're here. If that
this
makes
might be
sense.
What we'd say. We might say this album.
Yeah, that's what know. I'm saying. I think you've somehow recaptured that spirit that you had on. In those early
100%.
Days, and come back home, come 100%. Back to a place, but it's like, it's all still possible. You know what's possible now with the knowledge and the experience of the last 5 or 6 years.
You know what I also have as a piece of advice to give to anyone watching this that makes any form of art, and maybe you feel this way? I'm so relieved that I feel so great about this album, because there were weeks on end of making it where I was like, I think we've lost it.
I'm saying.
And that, like, I think sometimes you think while you're making something that it has to feel good in the moment to end up good. You know what I mean?
That's so true. Don't get stuck on
it. It's hard not to feel that way. You think, this feels, I feel so out of my comfort zone. I feel so
vulnerable. That's fart.
What is?
To love it while you make it.
To love it while you make it is fart. That's a fart.
That's right.
That's a fart.
A little bit of fear is good in that moment.
I
saw a video of us writing What Was I Made For, and there's not one single moment while we wrote it where we were like, wow, that was good.
We're just doing the job.
We were like, okay, that line. All right. What's the next line? Like,
so that's fear.
Yeah.
It's fear, and it's like creating, you know? You don't have to be like,
kill. Okay, so what's this album? Fear or fart?
Fear. It's fear, and it's growth, and it's, you know, discomfort, but also comfort, and you know, growing and learning and experiencing.
And that is all fear. I mean, what's scarier than changing?
What is scarier? Oh my God.
Well, you know, that's part of the experience of life is to accept that you really can't. And and it's the letting go and the moving forward is the all you can really focus on. And trust you got the tools to fucking deal with it. Because trust me, it's all undeal-withable.
People who talk about and look at their college experience or their high school experience as like this like unbridled period of joy or whatever. Like, I have so much empathy for like this thing that you cannot
build back in.
Because it's a moment in time. I have so much empathy for all the kids that like lost all that to COVID. You know what I mean? Like, it's really challenging.
Why did you say what you said at the end of the album? That's fucking great.
That's fire.
Just end it.
That's fire.
Just end
okay,
it.
Done.
Just end
done.
It.
Done.
As soon as the album was mastered, I was like, I want to do the Zane interview.
I'm so glad you wanted to do it.
We never do this.
This
is fun.
This,
you know.
Thank you, crew. That was
awesome. Thanks, guys.